Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in since they going back to showing Action Tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I'm, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis. And I welcome you back to the show. This is episode 54 of Tom's Prerogative. And on today's episode, we're going to be covering the movie that kind of comes before Superman Batman Apocalypse, which we reviewed last year. That being Superman Batman Public Enemies. And I bring this up because these titles are based on the same book series, the Superman Batman series that launched in 2004, I believe it was. And the first arc was Public Enemies, with art by Ed Brubaker. Jeff Loeb wrote both these arcs, mind you, but the art in Public Enemies was by Ed Brubaker. And then the second arc, the Supergirl from Krypton, was done by Michael Turner, the late, great Michael Turner. And, of course, last year I reviewed Superman Batman Apocalypse, which is based off that second arc. And, of course, I think you all know my feelings. I love that movie. I think the animation is incredible. I think the voice acting is incredible. It's just wonderful. This is more of a classic sort of cartoon sort of team-up type of storyline. It's a fun storyline, but it's more of a classic type of superhero storyline than Superman Batman Apocalypse was. Well, I'll get to all that later in the review, but it was tough to decide last year which one I should do. I want to go to the one I like more, or do we want to go to the one that's first in line? But, you know, a Superman Batman team up is always fun to review. With that, we're going to get just right into it with synopsis, as we have no emails or comments to go over. Superman Batman Public Enemy starts as LexCorp CEO Lex Luthor has been elected President of the United States during a severe nationwide economic depression. I guess George Bush was awful for everybody to the extent that we're willing to vote a villain in. I did that joke just for my Republican friends. Under his leadership, the economics began to thrive, and he assembled some force for government. A force of government-employed superheroes consisting of Captain Atom, Starfire, Katana, Black Lightning, Power Girl, and Major Force. Meanwhile, Superman and Batman maintain their distrust towards Luthor. The United States government discovers that a massive kryptonite meteor is hurling it towards Earth. Instead of asking superheroes for aid and wanting to take the credit for himself, Lex decides to destroy it with nuclear missiles. Lex arranges for a meeting with Superman in Gotham City under the pretense of forming a pact to take down the meteorite. This results in a battle between the hired Metallo, who is part of Lex's bodyguard team, and Superman and Batman. Following the hero's escape, Metallo is killed by an unknown assailant. Later that night, Lex pins Metallo's murder on Superman using footage of their battle to implicate him. Lex claims that the radiation being emitted by the meteor affects Superman's judgment, and he places a $1 billion bounty on the Man of Steel's head. While breaking into Starr's lab seeking information on the meteor, Batman and Superman find Metallo's remains and realize that the intense radiation had killed him and could not be the work of Superman. They are then attacked by an army of villains looking to collect on the bounty. The army includes such notable villains as Silver Banshee, Captain Cold, Killer Frost, Mr. Freeze, Gorilla God, Bane, Deadshot, Captain Boomerang, the Second Lady, Shiva, Mongo, Solomon Grundy, Parasite, just to name a few. And after some effort, most of the villains are defeated. The remaining villains are defeated by Captain Atom, who has arrived with Lex Luthor's superhero team to arrest Superman. All but Power Girl, whose loyalties are divided, attempt to capture the heroic duo. Superman creates a hurricane using his super speed, and the two heroes escape with Power Girl. In Metropolis, Power Girl admits that she feels threatened by Lex and doesn't believe Superman killed Metallo. Lex's superheroes catch up and the fight begins again, this time with Power Girl eating Superman and Batman. The Dark Knight realizes that Major Force killed Metallo under Luthor's orders and goads him into admitting it in front of everyone. In anger, Power Girl punches him in the stomach with so much force that it ruptures his containment suit. Captain Atom, ashamed by his complicity in Lex's misdeeds, absorbs the energy, disintegrating Major Force and injuring himself in the process. Meanwhile, Lex's missiles fail to stop the meteor due to the sheer amount of radiation being emitted. Amanda Waller discovers that Lex has been secretly been taking kryptonite steroids, making him lose whatever rationality he had left. Lex decides to let the meteor hit Earth so he may rule what remains behind. Batman and Superman break into Lex's lab to retrieve the data on the meteor's radiation. They end up battling with Captain Marvel and Hawkman, eventually emerging victorious with Power Girl's aid. I can't speak tonight, folks. Though you already knew that. Though Lex is unwilling to relinquish the data, going so far as to erase it from the lab's computer, Amanda Waller gives him a copy, and Batman and Superman fly off to Tokyo to submit the meteor data to the Japanese Toy Man. Waller tries to have Lex arrested, but he injects himself with more kryptonite steroids and dons a power suit. After escaping Waller and the military, Lex follows Superman and Batman. The Japanese Toy Man had built a rocket-propelled spacecraft intending to use it as a powerful missile to stop the meteor. The ship resembles a giant robotic composite version of Superman and Batman. With the data, Toy Man is able to calculate the necessary reinforcements needed for his own rocket so it won't explode before impact, as Luthor's missiles did. Lex arrives and disables the remote guidance system. Batman volunteers to fly the ship himself despite Superman's protests. Though initially faring poorly against Lex and his kryptonite power suit, Superman finally defeats Luthor in the streets of Metropolis in an aerial battle. Batman succeeds in destroying the meteor, and Superman finds him alive and well in an escape pod. With the truth of Metallo's death and public knowledge, Superman is cleared of the murder charges and Luthor is arrested, all the while ranting that he, as president, cannot go to prison. Batman then returns to Gotham while the Daily Planet star journalist Lois Lane arrives and she and the Man of Steel happily embrace. This is Superman Batman, Public Enemies. welcome back, and let's get right into it with music, shall we? The music, for the most part, is really good in this movie. I enjoy most of it. Though I think it comes down to really the sort of one piece we enjoy the most of all. I mean, the fight music is good for the most part, and some of the more subtle music is really done well. But it's that main theme that's also used in, like, the big villain fight. You know, that you just heard. You just heard that theme, you know. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Just the sort of the militaristic sort of beat to it, I think, is what I like most of it. It's just, it's very sort of grand. It's almost like a Justice League theme. I can imagine this being used as a theme for a Justice League animated show. That's sort of the feel that's behind it. And it has this sort of grandeur, epicness to the piece that I really, really enjoy. I mean, the piece is so epic that our good friend Scott Gardner continues to use it as the background music for the 22 Freaks trailer. It's just such an epic piece. There's so much, you know, like I said, grandeur and epicness behind it. It gets you pumped up for the movie. If there is a downside, it's like I said, while I enjoy the music and the music is good, the rest of the music compared to that one piece really is underwhelming. I think it's the word I'll find here. It's good, it does what it needs to do, but it's nothing spectacular. I mean, it's good, it's above average, but it's not so much above average. And sometimes it's hard to find. Those are sort of a few bad things I can find about the music. With that, we'll move on to animation. Let's talk about the overall style of Superman, Batman, Public Enemies. In this case, the capturing of Ed Brubaker's style. I thought they did an absolute terrific job in translating Ed Brubaker's style from the comics to the screen here. It's funny, you know, while Michael Turner has more of that realistic sort of anime style, or at least American anime style, I should say, that I really love, that a lot of more modern people enjoy, to put it in sort of a version of different animes, something like A Ghost in the Shell or stuff like that, where it's very stylized. Ed Brubaker has more of this sort of cartoon type of anime style, something like a Shin-Chan or a Hello Kitty, or more of sort of the more kid-friendly type of animes that you might find that come out of Japan. It's more of the cartoon sort of Teen Titans type of idea of, or sort of pop sort of art feel of anime that Ed Brubaker has. And don't get me wrong, that doesn't mean I don't like it. I enjoy it immensely, though I do admit I like Michael Turner's sort of anime style over Ed Brubaker's anime style. That being said, again, it's this more cartoony feel to it that I very much enjoy. Just the way, and you say cartoony, just in the sense of the way colors are used and the line work, the more simplicity of the lines and the sort of square jaws and things like that. It's anime, don't get me wrong, but it's a more simplistic look than someone like a Michael Turner. The shapes of the bodies and the buildings and everything else are just more simplistic. And since we're speaking on the character designs, let's talk about the character designs. I think the character designs are wonderful. I love Brubaker's Batman. Just a really well-drawn, again, that whole idea of having the right sort of stockiness. I think he goes a little bit over it, but overall, I enjoy it for what it is. Superman looks extremely well. It's just a classic take on Superman. Power Girl is drawn extremely well. Gee, what a shock. I like the way Power Girl is drawn. Ha ha. But no, she's done extremely well. I love that they really remain faithful to her costume. Because all things considered, they could have, I mean, for that matter, they could have not used her. They could have put a different person in there or whatever and not use her, not done the jokes that they did. But I'm very proud that they had the courage, and I say the courage to do it because, especially in this day and age where they're changing so much, and it is so much about, we don't want to anger, the minute minority who don't read comic books but are somehow offended by stuff that they don't read. Because it offends them. So we gotta, please them who don't spend any money on our comic books or our movies or anything. So, again, great courage to use her in the movie and really to remain faithful to her outfit. And remain faithful to all the characters' outfits. Like Captain Atom, Starfire, Katana, Major Force. The character design is just bar none for all the heroes. It's almost sort of fan service in itself to see all the different villains that they use, from Deadshot to Captain Boomerang to Killer Frost to Captain Icicle, Mr. Freeze, and definitely taking a more modern approach on Mr. Freeze. And when I say modern, I mean modernizing more right now approach. Lex Luthor, I thought, was done extremely well. I loved sort of the elegance. And again, while this probably has to do with the voice work as well, but the elegance there is done extremely well. Just the way they draw him, he has a sort of you can trust me feel to him, and you can understand why people would elect him president. At the same time, you see that sort of villainy underneath just in the drawing. I love that very much. With the action sequences, as we move on to the next point in animation, I thought we're done extremely well. I mean, that battle with the villains is just incredible. The flow of it, the maneuvers, again, every punch and kick is cleanly seen and can be made out, and you can follow the action, and yet it's a very advanced fight scene. There's just many great moments. One of my favorite moments is, Batman's facing off against the, five Frost villains. It was five or four, I can't remember which, but it was either five or four of them. And, Batman's, defeating the Silver Banshee, and he's, Batman's like, bring the heat! And, it's this, bombardment of heat vision against the ice at the Frost villains and knocks the Frost villains out. I love that scene. That's one of my favorite aspects of the fight. And just the great fluid movement, of the fight. The Hawkman, Captain Marvel, Batman, Superman fight was also an extremely done well fight. The weakest fight for me was the Luthor-Superman fight. And it did everything it needed to do, but it just seemed too simple at that case. It's almost a aspect of that the fights that came before in the movie have overshadowed that fight and are just so grand that it's hard for that final fight to live up the expectations of the other action sequences. But, all the action sequences, from the fight sequences to sort of the action of, the flying robots and the Batplane and everything, done it very extremely well. The backgrounds, once again, great use of CGI, really blended in well with using sort of Brubaker's line work within the CG to help it blend in with sort of Brubaker's design work from the original comic. So I thought the backgrounds were done extremely well, really remained faithful to the comic. And the special effects, again, very lightly used, not a big sort of special effect type of movie in this case, with the exception of maybe certain places here or there, but I thought done extremely well. With that, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get into acting and story.
In the decade of the 1930s, even the great city of Cleveland, Ohio, was not spared the ravages of the Great Depression. In a time of fear and confusion, a character emerged that would entertain and inspire millions of children and adults alike. He began not as flesh and blood, but as a simple line drawing. His comic book adventures thrilled millions around the world. The magic of radio gave to his name a breathless signature and sound. Then with television came a whole new generation to idolize his exploits. In the 70s, the world believed a man could fly. In the 80s, he was reborn in the comics, and the 90s saw his death, rebirth, and marriage. In the 21st century, he returned to the big screen and saw his origin changed and retold on several occasions. Through the decades, he has gone by many names. The Man of Tomorrow. The Last Son of Krypton. The Man of Steel. His strength is incredible. His name is legendary. His battle is never ending. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I host an internet radio show called Views from the Long Box. Superman is my favorite character of all time, and in 2013, he is turning 75. Because of this, a large portion of the episodes this year will be about the Man of Steel in a series I'm calling
Superman at 75, the celebration of a legend.
I'm going to mark Superman's birthday in fine style by examining all aspects of the character's history, from the comics, to the movies, to the television series, and beyond, both alone and with the best and brightest of the podcasting world. It may not be every episode, but the bulk of Views in 2013 will be all about the Man of Steel. He is the first and greatest superhero of them all, and he deserves no less.
Superman at 75. The celebration of a legend.
A series within a series, and the biggest birthday card a fan can give his favorite hero, only at Views from the Long Box. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytude production. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and for this series, over at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
Okay, let's get this show on the road, gang.
I'm Batman.
This looks like a job for Superman.
Comics Monthly Mondays, available the third Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
Ready to form Voltron!
I am Batman!
This is a job for Superman!
Right away, Michael.
Autobots, transform! By the power of Grayskull!
For the honor of Grayskull!
Hello. I'm the Doctor.
Charlie's Geekcast, coming January 1st, 2013, to www.charliesgeekcast.com.
And welcome back, and I hope you enjoyed the break. Let's get right back into it with acting, and I'm kind of going to do acting a bit different here. You know, usually I have my protagonist and antagonist. I'm actually going to split it up into original DCA and you cast members, and then talk a little bit about some of the newcomers. I think it actually sort of fits because there's different things to talk about each of these different groups. First of all, let's go over our cast list. We have Kevin Conroy as Batman, Tim Daly returning as Superman, the roles we know and love him for, alongside Clancy Brown returning as Lex Luthor, and CCH Pounder as Amanda Waller, and with some of the newcomers, we have Allison Mack as Power Girl, Alexander Berkeley as Captain Atom, and just to go down some of the other extras, Ricardo Chavira as Major Force, John C. McGinley as John Corbin as Metallo, Corey Burton as Captain Marvel, and though he's uncredited with it, as Solomon Grundy, LeVar Burton, you know, Reading Rainbow, as Black Lightning, Brian George as Girl of God, Jennifer Hale as Starfire and Killer Frost, Rachel McFarland as Nightshade, Lady Shiva, and Billy Batson, Alan Oppenheimer as Alfred Pennyworth, and as always, we also have some of the animators here. Andreas Romano, you know, the voice director, is Gigantus, computer, and additional voices. Bruce Timm voices Mongrel. I'm actually looking at, there's a name that goes Michael Gow as Hawkman, and just when I see that name, I think of Michael Gow, who voiced Alfred, or who was Alfred in the Batman movie series in the 90s. But, you know, back to voice acting. Again, like I said, I'm going to start with the DCAU originals, you know, DC Animated Universe. Which, of course, is, you know, Kevin Conroy, Tim Daly, Clancy Brown, CCH Pounder returning as Amanda Waller, just to name a few. And, you know, they did a wonderful job. Again, it was really great hearing, you know, the original voices back. You know, that was the great part. Again, these actors who know these characters so well, and it allows for some great moments in the film because they know these characters, how they would react, and it helps create this authentic, right, very real feel to the characters within the voice acting, really bringing them to life on screen. Especially with Kevin Conroy and Tim Daly as Superman and Batman. Again, because they know their characters and also know the other character very well, you know, it allows them to create some very good sort of conversational pieces between Batman and Superman. You know, the whole talk, you know, where they're in the cave and they're talking about one of Superman's sort of former villains that was like, was in, like, Superman Man of Steel, like, 1989. Like, one of the first, I feel like she was, like, the first villain that the Batman and Superman fought post-crisis in the DC Comics universe. Which, again, it's a little fan service throw. But, again, that conversation just feels very authentic. It, you know, every time they're having a conversation with each other, it feels very authentic. It also gives this sort of more friendly feel to the relationship than is usually played. You know, a lot of people like to play it more stern, more sort of not friendly. sort of more towards that non-trusting angle of each other. And so it's very good to a more trusting feel, at least with the relationship here in the movie. Of course, Clancy Brown as Lex Luthor, you know, it's Clancy at his best. You know, it's Lex Luthor as we know and love him. He brings everything to the role that he's always bringing. It's just, he does a wonderful villain, or he does the villain aspect of Lex Luthor just complete justice. If there was a downside, though, is that, you know, with all these characters, and Amanda, CCH Pounder as Amanda Waller as well, because of the movie, I just feel there's a lot more depth that, you know, is not explored. Again, this is something that's more explored, I think, in Superman Batman Apocalypse, which we're going to sort of talk about that in a little bit. I can't blame it because, again, it's the state of the movie. It's more of an action adventure. So, in that aspect, the sort of voice acting and sort of the conversational pieces that are going on here are a little bit more simpler. They feel like they're lacking the sort of depth I want to see into the relationship between these characters. But again, that's no fault of the script. Well, it's the fault of the script in the sense of the story, but it's because of what the story is. Moving on to the sort of the new actors, and in this case, the main ones are Allison Mack as Power Girl, Xander Berkeley as Captain Atom, Ricardo Chavita as Major Force, just to name a few. They all did a great job. You know, Allison Mack did a wonderful job as Power Girl. Gave it a more sort of Supergirl, more feminine performance than I would have think or would thought Power Girl would sound like. That being said, she had a great command in the voice that really lent itself to what I believe Power Girl to sound like. But again, like I said, just a little more feminine than I would have thought. And maybe just... it's like it's almost there to being sort of what I would picture Power Girl's voice being. And I fully admit that this is probably a lot to do with, I'm sort of trying to imprint that voice onto my idea of what Power Girl is from the comics, which would be the Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor stuff from JSA Classified 1 through numbers 1 through 4, which is a Power Girl story, and the initial 12 issues of the Power Girl comic from, I want to say, 2009-2010. I guess maybe because I'm imprinting, it's that sort of more feminine quality to it. You know, I kind of see her voice being a little less feminine, a little less high-pitched, more, a little bit more mature. And there's aspects when she's mature. I think where I feel this the most, though, is when Power Girl is around, you know, Batman and Superman. In this case, it kind of feels like her voice is being sort of overcast and overshadowed and overpowered by Kevin Conroy's and Tim Daly's. And it makes Power Girl kind of seem more like a rookie than, you know, the powerhouse that she really is. Xander Berkeley did a wonderful job as Captain Atom. A real sort of gave that real aspect of the commander and commander in chief aspect of this, you know, group of government sanctioned superheroes that I really liked. Ricardo as Major Force, just the sort of devil may care aspect that he gave it, I really did enjoy. And for the most part, I love the rest of the voice cast. I think they did an excellent job. With that, let's move on to story. And as we move on to story, let's just go right into, again, point one, main plot. And, you know, it's not that hard of a plot to really figure out. This is just a simple Superman-Batman team-up. You know, it's a little bit more complicated in the fact that, you know, there's this sort of backstory of Luthor being president. And while he may have became president on good terms and actually was trying to reform, you know, certain actions sort of turned him, and again, you know, so the whole focus on, you know, Batman and Superman not really trusting him, the whole thing about the kryptonite asteroid and everything else, it's just sort of backstory to help raise up, you know, again, this is just a classic Superman-Batman team-up, where it's basically Superman and Batman against the world. You know, again, it's that aspect that makes that whole scene to where all the villains and superheroes are attacking them that much more awesome. And again, there's nothing wrong with a very simple story set up like that. Again, it comes down to this was, again, the opening arc of a new comic. It's basically what this movie is based off of. The, I'm going to say, first six issues of Superman Batman, when it started in 2004 by Jeff Loeb, and again, his artist Ed McGuinness, you know, this was the kind of story that was really needed to, you know, draw people into this comic. It was a, you know, sort of classic action-adventure Superman-Batman team-up. And that's not missed here in the story. It's Superman-Batman working against the clock, against the world, to save the world, basically from an asteroid colliding and destroying the Earth. And there's objects in her way, whether it be Lex Luthor going mad, and all the different superheroes and villains he sends after them. And like I said, it's not bad. It's something different than what I like. You know, as I'll be talking about in a bit, I think when Superman and Batman, I do like a bit more of this sort of more psychological approach. I love a more deeper look into their relationship. Again, not that that's not looked upon here, but it is something to where it is more about the action and Batman and Superman working together, more of a sort of silver, golden, bronze age sort of Superman-Batman team-up. Moving on to point two is, you know, sort of like the different character stories, the character development in the plot in the movie, and there's not much character development for Batman and Superman. Again, like I said, it's classic sort of team-up between, you know, characters who are friends. If anything, that's really, it's just reinforcing the idea of these two being really good friends, which, to an extent, while I do like the more psychological sort of look into their relationship, I do like more of the idea that, you know, they're friends. You know, rather than the, you know, the whole, oh, well, we're barely friends because we barely trust each other sort of idea. And the constant butting heads between Batman and Superman that a lot of people like to sort of tell. I like the aspect that they're friends. And, you know, that whole line of, you know, you're going? Yeah? Well, don't expect me to be there. I wouldn't ask. Of course, them knowing that he'll be there. You know, it doesn't need to be asked. It doesn't need to be said. They're friends. They know they can trust each other. It's the whole aspect of Batman and Superman not being able to trust each other is definitely something that is way overplayed and way pushed into the ground. It, I definitely love this aspect, and I wish I would see it more of, you know, Superman, Batman, you know, in this sort of classic team-up where they do trust each other. And do work very well together. Again, that action scene just showed a lot of character development. Well, or more in the case of sort of reinforcement, character reinforcement of them, why they work well as a team and why they're friends. I bring up that scene to where, you know, Batman's caught by the cold villains and he tells Superman to bring the heat, and he brings the heat. And the way they work together to fight off the villains is just wonderful. It's not character development, but it is character reinforcement of an idea that I really, really like. I think a large part of the sort of character development, character plot here really goes to more than two people. Lex Luthor and Power Girl. When Lex Luthor, the development in the plot and his individual character development here, it's again sort of the regressing back to a villain. It's development in the sense of regression and watching this character, you know, watching power and sort of the poison of kryptonite warp his mind, you know. And that's one of the sort of bad things about this movie is, again, because it takes place at a certain place of DCNU, and it's just this quick sort of lesson into how Luthor became president. You know, going back to the actual comic, you know, again, this comic started where, you know, Lex Luthor was president for, I think, about a year at this point. You know, the whole Batman Hush storyline took place where Luthor was president. You know, Amanda Waller shows up in that comic, you know, when Batman's trying to figure out who hired Croc at the beginning of that comic arc, and, you know, Amanda's more like, you've got 12 minutes because Croc stole, or should say kidnapped, the son of one of Luthor's, not fundraiser peoples, but donors. One of his big donors, his kid got kidnapped by Captain Croc. And so even though Batman needed more time to figure out who had hired Croc, Amanda Waller just took him. Of course, that's really the simple aspect of how that happened. It's much more complicated than that, of course. But I feel, because you're missing that important piece of sort of the things that went on in the DCU with Luthor as president, because it's not really connected to that plot, it's really just connected to that one aspect in time during this small spot in the DC comic universe of the start of the Superman Batman comics. It's why I like the regression of Luthor here. I think it kind of hurts the movie because you're not seeing a beginning and ending. You're seeing one aspect. In fact, you're seeing the ending of a storyline take place in a movie. And because of that, it doesn't give much for character development. It's more of character regression here, as we see with Lex Luthor, you know, again, the whole being warped by sort of the kryptonite steroids that he's taking. And then, like I said, Power Girl, really, again, this is like one of her big points of being given some character development in the DC Universe. And really, as a character, she probably progresses the most because she starts at one place, but I think she's the character that is put there to sort of connect with the fans and allow, or should I say the viewers in this case, along with the fans, and allows the viewers and the fans to connect with her as sort of, she's sort of the avatar of the viewer throughout the movie that allows their, you know, thoughts and minds to change. In the sense of, you know, first being with Luthor and being on his super team, but then allowing the instincts to take over and realize that she can't trust him. As I talked about before, let's move on to the third point. With this movie, this is a classic sort of Superman Batman team up. And like I said, I love how they do it here, and I wish I would see it more. It's this aspect of that they are friends, and in this case, this is one of the few things it does I feel better than Superman Batman Apocalypse. But again, it's I think the story lends itself to allow that more of. You know, again, why Superman and Batman work well as a team is really shown to great effect here. Why Superman and Batman are very good friends and can trust in each other as confidants is shown here. And it's just a good classic Superman and Batman against the world, and they save it from a giant kryptonite asteroid. Of course, that kryptonite asteroid would be important plot point at for the next Superman Batman movie and the next arc in the Superman Batman comic that, again, this is based off of. Of course, that being the girl from Krypton, which was the name of the title in the story, which would later be turned into Superman Batman Apocalypse. Which brings me to my final point, which is there are a fair number of people that sort of consider this better than Superman, Batman, Apocalypse, and I think that's unfair to say. I think they're both wonderful movies. They both have different art styles, and I think it's just a matter of what do you prefer. You know, there are people, again, I think it has to be said, they're just people who don't prefer that Michael Turner sort of art style, that more realistic anime art style, and more of the cartoony anime style of Ed Brubaker, which is just fine. I prefer the Michael Turner style. Both styles are wonderful and beautiful in my mind. I just think for what the story was and what the plot was asking for, the art worked better in Apocalypse than it does here in Public Enemies. Though it does work here. Again, both work. I also think that the stories are vastly different, and it's very unfair to sort of compare them because, like I said, Superman, Batman, Public Enemies is a very classic sort of Superman-Batman team-up. You know, they team up to save the world. Superman, Batman, Apocalypse is a view into and maybe that's the one as again. I think I talked last year about how it was poorly named. It probably should have been Superman, Batman, Supergirl, which I don't understand why that could be the name. But it is this aspect of it is a more serious look into their relationship. I think it does a great job showing why they work by showing sort of their different opinions and their different approaches to similar problems in this case, and a similar issue, in this case, it being Supergirl. It shows their weaknesses as friends and their strength as friends. Again, that sort of more deaf look, and that's why I think the voice acting worked so much better there as well, is Kevin Conroy and Tim Daly are allowed to bring a little bit more depth to the characters there because of what the story is. But again, it's almost apples and oranges. They're two different story types. They're two different art types. It's what you like. I don't think neither movie is bad. I like Superman Batman Apocalypse better because I like more sort of in-depth, deeper looks into characters. I like character study more, which I think Superman Batman Apocalypse has with Supergirl and Superman and Batman and even Wonder Woman. Whereas this is just an action-adventure. It's almost like a sort of type of action episode you'd find on Justice League, in fact. I think at the end of the day, though, unfortunately, it does come down to more of the anime feel of Apocalypse, along with the poorly naming, that I do think there are a lot of people who don't like it. Again, to each his own, but I think, especially on a story I was reading earlier this week, which I'm probably going to talk more about next week, and I'm waiting next week to talk about it because of what I will be reviewing. I think it's very important to acknowledge that this type of, I don't want to call it discrimination, but these type of emotions do run in fandom. There are people that, because they just don't like something, sometimes don't give something a chance. And I think that's evident here. Not as much as maybe I'm making it out to be. A bit more subtle in the amount that it is. But at the end of the day, just again, I'll reiterate. Excuse me. These two movies are, to an extent, apples and oranges. They're both good. It's just which one you prefer. At the end of the day, Superman, Batman, Public Enemies is just a great, sort of action-adventure where Superman and Batman team up to save the world as the world is against them. It's a fun watch from front to back. It's great hearing the classic DCAU voices. The art style is fun and whimsical, as is Brubaker's style in the comic. A lot of great comedy moments. Something I didn't think I talked a lot about While I love the fact that they did keep the sort of when they're in Japan, the sort of the comments, Power Girl going, you know, you want to come in with us? No, I think this is just fine. And you know, when they meet to him, and he's like, please apologize to Power Girl for me testing my X-ray vision glasses. And of course, later the whole, will this fly? Is Power Girl's boob? Is Power Girl chest? Okay. Though the one joke I wish they would have brought over from the comics is right before, in sort of the battle of Hawkman and Captain Marvel, Power Girl's talking with Batman and Superman. She's talking about, how am I supposed to keep the attention of a 13-year-old as they're talking about Toy Man? And they look at her, and she looks down at her chest and goes, oh. Yeah, I know, it's my fan service joke. It's my one. Or in the case of this movie, there's three. Or should I say the comic, there was three. But, besides that, like I said, it's just a fun movie to watch, and I enjoy it every time I watch it. So this definitely gets a 4 out of 5 from me. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Remember, if there are any questions, any suggestions, any comments you want to leave about this episode, about this movie, or about the site in general, there are several ways. Of course, you can always contact the show. You can, of course, email us at absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution132@yahoo.com. And, of course, you can always like us and leave us a comment on Facebook. You can find us at www.facebook.com and search for Absolution Network. Like us and leave us a comment there. And, of course, you can always leave us a comment on the site that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Of course, while you're at the site, make sure you check out all our other friends along with all my other podcasts, which, of course, includes, Taco Momentum on the Absolution Network itself. They're back with new episodes. The Shaft Plus podcast, Gene and Chris are back talking about anime. You can find that at www.shaftplus.com. Also, make sure you check out past episodes of the Random Redbox Reviews, of course hosted by my good friend Chris Stanton. You'll find that at www.randomredboxreviews.com. And, of course, remember to check out my other podcast, which includes Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast. You'll find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, the Comic Book Crazy podcasting network that features Comic Book Crazy. And Hexcast, the only podcast reviewing every issue of Jim Valentine's Tarot, which is Black Rose. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're at these sites, remember to check out the sidebar where you can check out all our friends. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey's views from The Long Box and from Crisis to Crisis that he does with his good friend Jeffrey Taylor. Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawlspace, Steven Slyker's Major Spoilers Podcast, and Scott Gardner's Two Freaks Podcasting Network, along with many others. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, I went back and forth on this, but because of an article I read recently about a certain major company known for its animation and them performing layoffs to their classic division, I decided to go with what I'm going to be reviewing next week, which will make it a third straight week of DC, and I guess I will be leaving Iron Man, which I plan on reviewing for the final week of April. But next week, we are going to dive into classic animation history, and we're going to go way back to the beginning, to probably one of the first, if not the first, superhero animated show. I am, of course, talking about the classic Fleischer cartoons of Superman. So until next time, my Toonami generation, stay golden.
Well, that about does her. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom, signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.